Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation: Anderson, Gronewald, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Byers, and Barnard is temporarily out of the room. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which is a general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held November 3rd. Approve all claims through November 17th in the amount of $694,475.81. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve soliciting proposals for addition data and phone cables for first, second, and third floor.
I would move we approve agenda consent agenda items 1 through 5.
Second.
Moved by Fleece, seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. 7-6-6-0-1 with Barnard temporarily absent. Regular agenda comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Marlon, you're up.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get a resolution from me?
Yes, I got a resolution from you.
I got one, too. And I made one just in case.
I called him after I talked to you.
Morning. Thank you. Growing some ice cream.
More mud down in our end of the county. Yeah, we had a half inch. It's 4 inches in a week. Right. North of Fairbury, they ran Hydrosen yesterday. But he's getting some work done. Mm-hmm. They had about 80 hundredths of rain over there, so they field yesterday.
The first thing I got is when we got that zoning hearing at coming up at 9:30. You guys should have all the regs, the proposed regs that the Planning Commission's been working on. Moving on to the Highway Department, we have a resolution for doing a road study. It's in your packet. It's the one down there. It's East Sycamore Road. In the south end of section 918, that's Liberty Township, and then there's south 148th Road, and that's what the up to the half mile line, that's what the petition says. And what day was that handed in, Don?
November 2nd.
November 2nd. So this is just for me to do a road study on it, make a report back to the board.
Resolution 1035.
I would move we approve resolution number 1035.
Moved by Fleece.
Second.
Seconded by Bauman. Discussion.
I would, to vote this, I guess to do a study, and particularly after you have a petition, I think is relatively automatic, but I would warn my fellow board members as well as future board members as the very controversial road closing. It isn't going to be an easy one. I would certainly suggest that you talk to the parties and the neighbors involved and make sure you do an on-site viewing of this property. It's been tossed about for some period of time and is a contentious issue in the neighborhood and among the family. So just be careful.
Marlon, this is not just the East Road. This is a north down,
right?
Correct?
That's the legal... I've never seen a copy of the petition, but the legal description that was supplied to me by the surveyor included that South 148th Road. Does that state that on the petition?
Yeah, it says it, South 148th.
I faxed you a copy to your office. You should have.
Where Dave's right, I caution we proceed slowly with this. We are going to landlock some people if we do this. So, I mean, I think after the petition's here, Marlon has to do the study, but we need to proceed cautiously on it. Gary?
Rex, I would think that our county attorney could advise us as well, but you cannot legally landlock anybody anyway. You can't do that.
Right.
So any more discussion?
Would this be a residence that would be landlocked, or is it access to...
Just a small farm acreage that, between creeks and bridges already being out. And, well, the study will bring up all those issues. So.
Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve.
Moving on with my report, we have several bridges that we need to put new back walls in that are either have wood back walls that are getting basically deteriorating to the point where it's going to start undermining. In the steel line, it was $60,000 line. We've committed $53,451. That's for that bridge on North 12 Paddock, which is just about done. Remaining in that line, $65,78. We could do them with wood. That'd be cheaper, but the steel would last longer if we put some 7-gauge steel in there. Just giving you a heads up, we're doing some cost comparisons on it right now.
How many years difference are we talking, Marlon? What has the wood lasted?
Oh, and it would last, I wouldn't have to worry about it again, but I'm, 20, 30 years. But steel would last probably longer unless you get in a acidy creek somewhere. So just letting you know that. And then we had some discussion Monday on the armor coat and went over the 120 proposed. And I was just going to bring everybody up to date on that. We're proposing taking the overrun out of the FEMA line. That was a rough winter on our blacktops, and also some blades out of that FEMA line. Moving down to projects, the Barnson South, they were putting up the forms on the South Pier, and then we got rain Friday. I was down there yesterday. They were working. They were tying some rebar, getting ready to hang that into the forms. I'm not sure when they're going to pour that last pier, but that's the last bottom work they'll need to do, and then they'll have to start forming the deck. On the Beatrice North, we're working up estimates for the scope of services and the ICE for CE services. The ICE is an independent cost estimate that I have to do. The state does one, and the construction engineer does one, and then we get all together and come up with a final agreement. Same on the NY Moore and the Philly North bridges, but we'll be working on the environmental consulting firms on that. The rest of it is basically what the crew's been up to. We're done with the North 12 bridge. It just needs some little dirt work and some ditch cleaning to finish that project up as soon as it dries up a little. Asphalt crew was still doing overlays. Now they're doing starting crack sealing. Oh, and the dirt crew is putting in tubes. We've got a few more to put in. We also, on that tube line, we're going to be running out of money on that pretty soon. I think we've got some more ordered, and we're going to try and keep that under what the tube line says. So,
Gary?
Two questions before we get much farther. What's the size of that deck you said you're going to be pouring?
That's on that Federal Aid Bridge. It's 120 by something, by 28.
We're pouring that ourselves?
No, it's federal contract.
Oh, okay. The tube line gets me back. I guess I'd want to ask Matt, how much money do we have left in that budget, and where are we at on the budget for some of this stuff? Are we over the? Are we over already, Matt, or where are we at?
We had, what did we budget? $70,000, and I don't, my expenditure sheet, I don't have the most current one. I was going to wait until after today to get the most current one, so I don't.
Marlon, what's your guess? I mean, we keep running over on some of this stuff. We get our money spent way too soon on some of this. I'd ask Marlon how he's going to figure out how we're going to control some of that.
That was an issue. We came up on the $15,000 over on the overlay of where that was going to come from at our highway committee meeting.
At what point are we going to keep spending money we don't have on some of this stuff? We're going to have to...
Well, I would just say we're ending our construction season. So, yeah. I mean, you're always going to front load, till now, and then you don't have any construction virtually from, you know, now till May again.
But so. I guess my point is, if we're over on the budget of what we spent, I would suggest maybe Marlon will have to do a better job of doing some of this budget work, because we know our road and bridge plans and stuff are done in advance all the time. And so my question is, we keep doing this, and me and Matt has had this discussion too about how do we, you know, it just seems like no matter what department it is, it's not an endless well, and we don't have a machine to print money at some point in time.
Yeah.
We're going to have to start watching this so we don't get the end, and well, we just take more money here or there, and I just think that we ought to probably do a little better job on the upfront instead of always having to scramble around looking for money at the end all the time.
Well, the culverts, as of October 22nd, we had 28,000 something remaining, but then we had a bill. I think there was one for 19,000 something, and so, you know, we're looking at probably 9,000 left in there, probably enough to get two more culverts. In that line, in my proposed budget, I proposed 110, and it was cut down to 70. You know, and basically next spring, you know, we'll have to do grading or something because there won't be any money for culverts in the spring. So,
but you know, Marlon, your statement right there, your proposed budget, you still have to operate what
right.
you have and not proposed.
That's what I'm working on. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Matt,
we don't purchase culverts ahead anymore, correct? That discussion said
we take quotes on per load.
Okay, so
seemed like the price is better if they got to guarantee it for a year. They seem to go. Padded a little.
Okay, any more discussion? Shirley.
I guess I just think if it goes over, maybe we'll have to take some out of inheritance or something like that. I mean, we took it out for the remodeling of the courthouse, and I guess I feel like our roads and our highways are more important than actually the courthouse even was.
Comment. That's just what I was going to say from a rural perspective, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there saying that works both ways.
We need to remember that's just a line item, though. That's not the overall budget. It's a line item. So
you look at the total budget.
Total budget, he's okay. It's just the line item on that particular project.
And we have in the past, last year with Rock and things, we have dipped into the inheritance fund, so that's been there. It wouldn't be abnormal to do that. It's not that we've never done it before, so there are times to do that.
Yeah, last winter was an unusual winter, and I, you know, right now the Rock requests are going crazy, so it'll be another interesting fall, I think.
Any more discussion? Marlon, what else do you have?
That's it, till the zoning hearing.
Okay.
Okay.
Approve or disapprove resolution to transfer $300,000 from the general fund to the road fund for operations of the highway department, resolution 10-36.
I move you approve resolution number 10-36.
Moved by Fleece.
Second.
Seconded by Bauman.
You want to explain for the new people what this is?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Basically, since the Highway Department is under the general fund of the county board. We have to, at various times throughout the year, transfer money from general fund to the Highway Department for them to operate. It's not like
they can't have tax dollars.
They don't have any tax dollars involved with any of this. So everything that comes into the treasurer's office for gas tax, for everything, basically. So we have to transfer it to operate the operations of the highway department. So probably throughout the year we may have two or three, maybe four of these, just depending upon funding and how it comes in and stuff, because they can't spend any money unless we transfer it.
Cash flow.
Or we can't pay any bills unless we transfer it.
Matt.
And there's other funds in the budget that we set up to transfer as well. It's just not for this department. It's just a normal taking money from this pot to go to this pot so this department can spend it. And there's multiple transfers that may happen throughout the year. We do it every year.
Okay. Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Mark Mines, Emergency Management Activity Report.
Good Good morning. Just an update. The meeting, the committee met last week and went over some things, and this is just kind of a follow-up. Some of the activities that's been going on the last month and things we talked about at the committee meeting. We're currently updating 911 map for ambulance districts. There were some changes there, so that'll have to update the computer at the 911 center and print some new maps for the fire for the ambulance districts. I want to talk a little bit about our ABL system. That's the tracking system that's been placed in the law enforcement vehicles and the ambulances in the county. There was a piece of equipment that was not anticipated to be needed in the beginning, but as we traveled throughout the county, we were finding that we were losing signal due to not having this piece of equipment. We thought we could get by with it, but because of coverage and our terrain. There was a piece of equipment that we needed to purchase, and we went 50-50 with the city on that. It's a piece of computer equipment that's in the system down at the 911 center. The total cost of that was $8,110, and we're going to share that with 50% of that. And then that falls under communications equipment, which I'll get 50% of that back yet on top of that from EMPG money. So we'll end up at $8,000, but it'll end up costing us about $2,000. And that piece of equipment's been ordered. They actually brought in that piece of equipment on a loaner basis to test it to make sure it was going to work for us. So that's being purchased. The bid spec, I completed it on the FEMA trailer, and I found out yesterday that they did not want to see us advertise that till December. We can get rid of that, and that's my trailer. And he thought it would not be a good idea to not even advertise it till December, just for audit purposes, in case an auditor, FEMA auditor, stopped in and picked up Beatrice paper and seen we were already selling it in November. They'd assume we just waited till December. So I'll bring that to the next building and ground in the first December meeting. We'll bring it forward so we can advertise for those bids. And we have to, the agreement was, you know, we paid $7,500 for the trailer, and we had to keep it for 18 months. So 18 months will be up December.
And that's a wonderful trailer that should bring an extremely high dollar.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I've never seen one better than that.
That's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But only put a basement
on
under it.
Yeah. It's going to be great. So we'll put a big – I thought about putting Christmas lights on for Christmas, kind of get everybody's attention maybe. I don't know.
Why not?
I've talked about a little bit about communication systems in the county, and by January 1 of 13 – everything has to be moved communications-wise from wideband to narrowbanding. And I know we put money in the budget this year to start that process so it didn't all end up on us in 1 year. And so working with Schaefer's Communications, doing some testing, not some testing, we did a lot of testing, working with the Sheriff's Department and the Highway Department, we did an audit to determine what equipment we needed to replace. Unfortunately, again, because of our terrain, we've always had a problem with communications in our county. And when I first came on, one of the big projects that was started when I came on was working on our communications, especially for the law enforcement. And unfortunately, we found that switching to narrowbanding, our coverage is even less than what widebanding is going to be. And so we're purchasing some equipment. We're moving some things around at the highway department. Possibly using some different radios that are a little less expensive, but we're going to, as a concern of ours now, is that what equipment we're going to have to add, especially in areas such as Adams, Claytonia, down around in by north of Odell, south of Ellis in that area, and over by Liberty. And so we're doing that testing, finding that it is a lot less coverage than we even have now. So we're really concerned about that. I was hoping to have a plan with Schaefer's, pretty soon. He's looking into. I called him again this morning. We're still looking into some equipment that will work with our voting system. We currently have a voting system that brings a signal into the police department, the 911 center, from six different locations. But the signal we're finding that is not working is a signal going out of Beatrice, which is only one instead of the six coming in. So there's a reverse voting system we're looking at, and so we don't have that quite down yet, so I didn't want to present that plan until that piece of the puzzle's in there. So hopefully the next 2 to 3 weeks we get that plan in place. So,
Mr. Chair.
Dave.
Is this narrow band a state mandated?
Federal.
It's
FCC,
federal.
Okay. Yes.
The
FCC mandated, yeah. We're pretty fortunate on the equipment that we have because of what we purchased through Homeland Security and the fire grants and things. Since I've been on board, everything we've purchased has been narrow band capable. But we still have some older equipment that's over 10 years old that's out there working yet, and especially in the highway vehicles and things. And we're actually, there's some equipment that I've been working with Bill down at the highway department. There's some equipment that's not used very often that we did some testing with some portable radios, handheld radios, where the handheld's going to be $500-$600 versus $1,200 to $1,800 for the radio that's in that vehicle now. So we're going to be able to move some things around, and but we want to test it first to make sure that'll work. But that's some of our planning we're doing. So, and again, keeping in mind these are first responder vehicles, so that budget is going to be 50% reimbursed from EMPG money. So I think we budgeted $60,000 this year, and $30,000 will come back from EMPG money. So.
I think just to interrupt, we need to start talking in the terms of not using all of our acronyms.
Okay.
And explain what they are. The new members aren't necessarily familiar with what every one of those letters mean, and I think it would be helpful if we started explaining what EPMG is, what, you know, would you please?
That's
I think it'd just be
that's
helpful.
That's easy to do, because we go through that all. We find ourselves doing that a lot.
Yes,
in
we
meetings.
Do.
Emergency Management Performance Grant is what the EMPG money is. So, and that's a reimbursable. It's based upon our emergency management program. Every county is required by state statute to have an emergency manager. To do that, you can apply for emergency management performance grant. Your money is based upon what your performance and your program is in your county. So, I think this year was what. I can't remember for sure what we get, $60,000 somewhere in there.
Well, and at the state level, they're fairly aggressive about wanting the counties to get that money back. Is it correct that there's quite often a lot more sitting up there that just never gets recovered?
Right.
So it's Mark's been very aggressive at bringing that money back, and there's certain ways you have to fill out paperwork and send that program up.
We had a modular emergency response radiological transportation training here in Beatrice, which was the first time in about 8 to 10 years I know of, did radiological training with the Beatrice Fire Department. That was for a daytime training. We're working on an evening training for the volunteers. Very good federal training that was free. CPR and first aid training will be offered to county employees. We've set the dates of December 1st and December 2nd. So we had 2 dates so the offices wouldn't have to have all their staff go to 1 day. They can split it. You only have to go to 1 day of the training. So if anybody's here on the board is interested in attending that. We'll be having it at 8 o'clock on the 1st and the 2nd.
Danny?
Yeah, I want to interrupt you again. The one thing we want to be certain our employees know, there have been some changes on how you do CPR, and so I think it's very important that people get updated information on how to do this. It's not just the old method. It's there's a new method.
Right. And the highway department's completed it. Because of some standards, we require the highway department employees to take it. We offer it to the rest of the county employees, and we usually have a pretty good turnout of county employees. So I do encourage the employees, as I see them, that it's a good thing to take it so and have it available. And we do have the defibrillator, and that they cover the AED, the automatic defibrillator training in that. We have a defibrillator in the hallway here, and we have one at the sheriff's office, and we have a defibrillator at the county highway shop. So.
Can you do you use the hospital's model? Do you use their piece of equipment as far as the individual that you do the CPR on, or do you do actual people?
The mannequins.
Okay.
Yes.
They have a mannequin that is up to date,
but,
and really.
NIRMA is teaching the class.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Matt.
And one of the things I think folks are somewhat afraid of is the fact that the old CPR, you had to touch somebody. You had to physically engage that person, and that's the purpose of that. The new standards, it's less mouth-to-mouth, and it's more compression. That's the new standard in healthcare. They're finding that compressions are really the hallmark of trying to save people. And there's barrier devices, so it's a good thing to get. As an employee, the county's going to pay for it. Help potentially may help a spouse, a child, a friend, a neighbor. It's very valuable that as many people as we can, if not just our employees in the county. I guess I'm kind of stumping for CPR here. It's very important that as many people in the county get that as possible. You never know who you may come up on to be able to save, or at least try.
We're actually working on a CPR day, and trying to decide Red Cross and trying to find a day that we'll offer it, like at the 4-H building, and it'll be several instructors come in. And actually, you can take CPR at home now. You can buy home training sessions, and they come up with a little blow-up, a mannequin, just the head portion of it and compression parts. So they actually, it's important.
I guess, and I know our new supervisors know this already, when Mark especially taught, and he has probably more than anybody, talks about all this grant money. We all know that it's money that they take from us every year, and if you jump through 50 hoops, you get some of it back. So always, and me and Ron Fleece has had this talk more than a few times in 4 years about grant money. So just always remember it was ours in the first place.
Some of the other things on the list, I won't go through all of them, just continuing working with the new security system. We had some mass fatalities training for the sheriff's office held here, went over our plan. I have on here also, one thing I handed out was a copy of the most recent summary of our emergency management grant. We had a Southeast Nebraska emergency management region grant, which is the 14 counties, basically under NACO, county officials district. That gives you an idea where we're at, what's been spent on a regional level, all the way from 07 money to 2010 money. One of the things too is that we talked about the emergency management performance grant. One of the things they told us in our regional meeting is that in 2011 we're going to have more money, like you said, Matt, than 2010 for emergency management performance grants. So they're really hitting us to build our programs and get that money, and they want to see that money come back to the local level. So
Matt has a question.
There had been some leadership issues with our region, things not necessarily getting done. Is that taken care of? Are we going down a good road now? Is that
our elections are the first meeting in January, so we're trying to get that corrected. That's a big concern of our region, and I think the state has stepped in a little bit now.
There is a trickle-down effect of how funds come in, programs, and training. That region has to be a strong regional committee to be effective.
Yes. I know we need to work on NIMS training, the National Incident Management System training that's required. We have by elected officials at our regional meeting. There's some new requirements, some new NIMS coming out, things that has to be done. So we have a new plan that I'll be handing out where we're at. And for those coming in that don't have the training, we used to be able to teach it. We're not allowed to do that by the state no more, so you have to go online and do the training. And I will get that new copy of the new requirements out to you, so you got that opportunity to go online. And I can cover it with you individually or together if we need to make sure we get that training. If you do not have, if people are not the National Incident Management System certified, you will not be receiving the federal funds. They can hold back disaster money, et cetera. So we want to make sure everybody's compliant. We voted a long time ago to be a NIMS compliant county, so we want to make sure that happens.
Any questions?
I think it's here.
Okay, Mark, are you involved with the Verizon?
Yes.
Okay. Approve or disapprove government account agreement with Verizon Wireless for cell phone service for county?
We've had Verizon service, back when it was Altel, for some time. This form, I do not have the most current form because we chose to, it's currently in Gage County Emergency Management's name. We wanted to switch that to Gage County. This Chris Andrus did not give me the new form to fill out. I guess we'll approve it. I think everybody had a copy of it. Is that correct, Matt? The change on this form would be, instead of saying Gage County Emergency Management, a government entity, it'll say Gage County, a government entity. This allows us to receive the government funding, less taxes towards our Verizon.
Gary has a question for you.
Well, any question? When me and Matt had a meeting, emergency management meeting, The second part of this is simply because if we don't have it listed this way, and it's as important as the other thing that Mark said, if we want to find out as a Board of Supervisors what's been going on with our phone system with employees, if it's not put in the contract the way it is, they won't allow this board to see the phone records. So that's equally as important as the other, because it's been an issue, and so that's just as important as the other part of it, and that has been changed. Matt caught that in the contract when Mark presented it to us. So from now on, if we want to see what's going on with the employees, this is one less thing we have to deal with, because then we'll have to know. Otherwise, they wouldn't give us the information. So I just thought the board ought to know that there's two parts to this.
It's amazing what government makes us do with our money.
Well, if we're going to pay the bill, we should have a right to see what's going on the phones, and that's, I think, that was the direction, one of the directions we went for.
Well, and there's a level of practicality, too. If I think the clerk's office, if there's changes or things that need to be made, it just was another person that had an opportunity to get in and see those things.
Don's name is on the account, too, so.
Mr. Chair?
Dave.
Just to rehash history, and I guess... Don't the law enforcement people have their own personal phones, and then they're paid so much subsidy for using their phones?
Correct, $25 a month.
So that, boy, that gets us clear out of that's the sheriff's problem if they're texting and doing things that's their private phone, and it's between the sheriff and them. We're not
correct.
In but
there.
The difference is now, they work
but,
for the
but
sheriff.
Other, but
Marlon
other
has a phone. Mark has a phone.
Custodian.
Yes, we but, still supply
so
phones.
So really the county phones are pretty limited in number.
How many phones, Mark?
Six, I believe. It's Marlon, myself, Dave Jones, Sean Wise, the foreman, assistant foreman, and the on-call foreman.
Assessor, does Dan have one?
And there's a, we have a, Dan takes one that's very seldom used if he gets out of the house somewhere, he needs to call somebody to meet him or whatever, and that's also our backup phone in case we need it for disasters.
The difference was what Dave said was, as we know, and this discussion goes back and forth over time, but it's the way county government's set up. Gus's guys, so to speak, work for him. The ones we're talking about actually work directly for the board or under the board's direction, so there is a difference, and we have no way of knowing that if we wouldn't have changed it, what we could do with the phone. So, and all the other elected officials are the same way. They, you know, we've always had this discussion, and it's the way county government's set up. But these phones, it's people that are directly under this board, and Gus's people kind of work for Gus. So that is the difference.
And as part of the plan, and Mark watches this, is if someone would go over a plan for whatever reason, that employee reimburses back, and that's just the system. So there's a finite amount that can be used, goes over, there's a payback, and that.
And I have to watch it because, again, we 50% of that phone bill is reimbursed because of first responders from Emergency Management Performance Grant money. If something's wrong on that, they come to audit this, they say, what's this? So we have to manage that. I have to watch every bill. So,
any more discussion? Vote 7-0 to approve. What else, Mark?
Do you want to go over why I'm here on the proposal for
a motion?
Well, we didn't have a motion. We need a motion.
Make a motion to approve the government account agreement with Verizon Wireless for cell phone service.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Fleece. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Okay.
Did you want me to be here for that wiring for the EOC? Or do you want to go over that now?
No.
Okay. I'll be available. Trey, if you have any questions on this. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. Okay. Let's do the resolution to transfer, then we'll jump to Lisa. Approve or disapprove resolution to transfer $44,691.16 from the general fund to the 911 fund for maintenance of the fund.
10-37.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Groenewald. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Okay, I think everything else will take longer. We have a timed event coming up, so we will jump to Lisa. Are you ready to give the recommendations?
Yeah.
for Planning and Zoning Commission on proposed change to add section 6.5, small and commercial wind energy conversion system.
I don't know if all of you have your, good morning, if you have your regs in front of you, but I'm going to kind of briefly explain a little bit of how we came about what we did. This project actually started about a year and a half ago, and as Marlon and my commission members, along with Rick from the county attorney's office, will confirm, we attended a lot of meetings, researched a lot of counties and states of what they're doing. And we talked to state officials. We talked with counties that have had some problems with different issues and so forth. Also binding on that in the last year and a half was the fact that Nebraska legislation finally passed 1048, which helped us decide the size of small systems versus large systems. And it also explained how the turbines themselves would be taxed, because there was a lot of questions upon that as to would it change the valuation of the adjoining neighbor or the landowner themselves. So you have before you this morning two recommendations as far as what we're looking at. Small wind energy systems, which state stats set that at 25 kilowatts. And so we do, as you read through them, have it in parentheses that it looks like when they get back into session, if they can address the size again one more time, it may go as high as 100 kilowatts, which in this county you've already had two permits that have been issued within the last 2 years for two small energy systems. One was a 60 watt, I believe, and one was an 80 kilowatt. So because of the size of the 25 kilowatts, which the state set, the commission sees no reason that we need to actually have a hearing process for that. Keep in mind, the last two for that small system, we did have a special use permit for that. But these are sizable, very small units. You'll see the designs now hooked even possibly to the house because of the technology changing and so forth. So as you read through our regs, at our hearing also we heard no opposition as far as for the small wind energy systems to go to a conditional use permit, barring that they would meet all the inspection and the criteria, which the criteria is included as setbacks, which I'll get into in a little bit. But going on to the commercial wind energy systems, which are those that also include aggregated projects. So an aggregated project would be like what Highway 136 is proposing or that they've been researching. Their association has. Writing those regs were much more complex as we took into consideration the factors that would affect everybody. Just to give you an idea, those turbines will produce about 2.5 to 3 megawatts of energy. So, and then they stand about 450 foot tall. So as you perceive that as a whole wind farm coming in, you may have anywhere from 40 of these to 100 of these in an aggregated project. So the commission's biggest concerns were, of course, setbacks, and that's what we really addressed a lot of. That would be setbacks from turbine to turbine, setbacks from the property lines, setbacks from the roadways, which as county administrators you're all concerned about, especially through the construction process. Also the decommissioning of the unit itself, and more importantly probably the nuisance factor that some may see could be a problem with it being there, shadow flicker and things like that. But for the wind developers themselves, the first part of the project is to construct a Met Tower, which you now have two Met Towers in operation here in Gage County in the western part of Lincoln Township. They're currently in operation, one by Volkswind, and also the other one is by Infinity Wind Power. Those were allowable at the time because we did not have the regs written. Our commission discussed it with Marlin's office and felt that it could fall under the antenna and the cell tower provisions, which were allowable by a conditional use permit. So the commission recommends that still continue, but it's now moving over, instead of out of the antennas and so forth, it's moving over to our wind regs. So be allowable by conditional use permit. Now, the first draft of our regulations, which we submitted at our hearing, saw a lot of opposition on those setbacks. And so we heard testimony to the effect with the proposed project that it would eliminate a large amount of acres based upon the setbacks that we had set. We actually went two times the height of the entire unit, so keep in mind that's a unit that's 400 and maybe as high as 450 foot. So, you know, we went two times, so you're eliminating 900 feet around a whole section. So in that case, the project for the developer may seriously not even be something that they would consider because it eliminated so many acres. And also hearing testimony from the Highway 136 group at our meeting, we found that they had already at that time had over 16,000 acres committed to wind rights. So that helped us also understand that we needed to have provisions in our regulations for those individuals that are participating in the easements and also those that are non-participating. So if you have your wind regs in front of you, otherwise I'll just briefly go over the subjects of matter that will come up today at the hearing. The first one is the minimum of lot size, which I will just want to address briefly. We don't feel that that's going to be an issue because most of these landowners have committed their entire land, you know, or their plot to the easement. So the size of the minimum amount of acres shouldn't really be a problem. When you look at number 3, and this is on page 5, starting on page 5, we're talking about turbine to turbine. So this is, again, in an aggregated project which is being proposed. We went with a minimum of 1.1 times. So that is industry standard. You'll hear a lot about industry standard today, and that's what we really researched on and talked with other counties and states on. Number 6 refers to the turbine to property line. So this is where we plugged into that participating landowners versus non-participating. So turbine to property line. For those that are two participating landowners, we went, first we had two times the total height. And we really found opposition with that because that would eliminate a lot of acres. So as we went back and revisited it, we went with zero setbacks for two participating landowners. And the reason why is because a lot of times in agriculture, as most of you know, you don't want to disrupt the way that the individuals are farming the ground. So that way they could put it on a fence line. They could utilize the road that they both are using already. And more importantly, pivot corners. Now, I can contest on the west side of Beatrice, there's not that much water over there. But, you know, there is available within the pastures and so forth. Pivot corners seem to be something that they would really like to be able to utilize. So that's why we went with zero setbacks with two participating landowners set beside each other. For those that are non-participating, so that you have a turbine and then you have a non-participant within these easements, we went with 1.5 times the height. 1.5 times the height. So in other words, a 450-foot turbine would have a setback of 675 foot from the property line. So, and we didn't list what these setbacks would be because, again, the size of the turbine depends upon the design. So that's why we just left at 1.1 or 1.5. Number 7 addresses the setbacks to the county roads. And so this is our concern that came in with the size of the project, the weight, the tonnage, and so forth. We wanted to be considerate of what possible damage could come to the roads, but we addressed that in our survey, and a little bit later I'll share that with you. But we went 1.1 times the height, 1.1 times the height. So that would be around that 495 foot based upon a 450 foot plot. Now with the help, and this diagram, which was provided up by us by Volkswind, Jeff Wagner, who was with Volkswind, when we were trying to ponder how these setbacks would affect, I'm going to pass this around so just so that you can see. That orange line actually addresses how two times the height affects all this property that they are looking at. And so as you can see from those diagrams, that's why we had to readdress that.
Lisa, how about setback from residences?
That's what I'll get into shortly. Okay, so again, roadway, we went 1.1 times from the road. So that would be the roads right away. Okay. Then number 15 addresses turbine to residence. So the turbine to residence is something that we plug in those participating individuals and those non-participants. For those that are participating and have a turbine that's constructed on their own farm, we went with zero setbacks again. Because it doesn't matter to us, you know, if they're participating, zero setbacks, as long as they're staying from the property lines and so forth at 1.1 times, if there's an adjoining property. However, from non-participant residences, we went with a quarter of a mile, which would be 1,320 feet, right? Yep, 1,320 feet from the residence, from turbine to residence. That's very consistent with what we do with livestock facilities. It's consistent what we are doing with the rock quarry. And also factors in that most sensitive issue as, you know, when you get into the nuisance factor. As you look through the application process, you'll also see that we address the possible road damage that could come to the road. And we did it much similar to like what we did with the construction of the rock or the highway down here, road improvements by constructors, is that we're asking that everyone with the proper jurisdiction sit down, analyze the road, do a pre-survey, construction survey, and then analyze that road. And then it would be up to the developer to repair the roads according to what they need to do. You'll also see in there that we address the discontinuation or the decommissioning of the project or just one turbine. Let's say if it doesn't work after a two-year period of time, what happens with that? We address that. However, keep in mind that these individuals, these landowners, do have a lease agreement with the developer, and I'm sure that's something that they're very concerned with also, and so they will address that in their own lease agreement. You know, as a commissioner, we realize the huge impact that this could come to Gage County, and I know you guys do too. We heard a lot about industry standard, and while many times they seem to be very reasonable, we followed them after talking with other counties. When we got into some issues with setbacks from the county road, we felt that we needed a little bit more comfortable cushion for you guys to consider. So, because as you know, our job is to consider everybody. That's our job that you appointed us to be concerned about the safety and concerns of all citizens. So, just addressing just briefly that how these turbines will be tax assessed. 1048, the tax valuation on these turbines, should they be, this would be on the commercial systems. My understanding of the small systems under 25 kilowatts would go on the personal property. But on the commercial units, 1048 clarified that these turbines would actually be as if they weren't treated as if they weren't even there. So in terms of the tax valuation for the landowner, it would not change. It wouldn't move him on over to the commercial area, or it wouldn't move or raise any of the valuations of the adjoining landowners. But what it does, it receives, there is a fee that's attached to those turbines, and it's called the nameplate capacity rate, and it's an annual fee. So nameplate capacity rate is based upon the total megawatts that particular turbine would produce. The fee is $3,518 per megawatt. So in this case of what's being proposed with these particular turbines that produce, two and a half megawatts, you're looking at probably around $8,800 assessed per turbine per year, you know, as an annual fee. What happens is the state collects the fee. The fees go to Lincoln. Lincoln sends them back down to county, gives them to our treasurer. They determine there in that office which tax district that turbine actually sits in, and then from there it's allocated out to the proper allocations. So keep in mind, you know, an 50 or 100 megawatt aggregated project could bring a substantial amount of funds to the county on an annual basis. So that's how they're feed. Questions? Yes, Dennis.
How much of that does the state keep before they send it back?
My understanding, I would be, Patty, I talked with Patty Milligan, and at this particular time, our understanding is 100% of that comes back to the county. But that's as of, and that's based upon 1048, so if that changes after legislation goes back into session, but that's as of today, so from my knowledge.
Basically, centrally assessed. Similar to pipelines and railroads, I assume. It sounds like a similar process anyway.
Yeah. So if you guys have any question as the hearing goes on that you wonder how we looked at certain things, you know, I'll be glad to try to answer what the commission thought as we went along. So thanks.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. It's 9:35. We have a public hearing to support and or opposition from the public on zoning regulations change. Proposed change would add section 6.5, small and commercial wind energy conversion system. Need a motion to open the public hearing at 9:35.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Fleece. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Is there a sign-up sheet available, Marlon, for those that choose to address the board? Name and address and sign up, and then we will. The purpose of the hearing is for the wind regulation zoning change. And no one care to address the board? No one care to address the board? Need a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Approve or disapprove resolution on zoning regulation change to add section 6.5, small and commercial wind energy.
So moved.
37. 10-38, isn't it? 10-37.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. 7-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove addendum to Radigan Schottler manufacturing contract for installation of materials of hardwood flooring in district courtroom and offices, the amount of $20,688.
This is a small. I move to approve the addendum to the Radigan Schottler manufacturing contract installation of hardwood flooring district courtroom and offices, $20,688.
Moved by Fleece.
Yeah, this is an addendum.
Seconded by Bauman. Ron, you're up.
Yeah, this is an addendum to the original contract. At that time, you were estimating $24,586 for this installation work. Since then, there was one office is taken out because it no longer became a security. It became a security thing and didn't need hardwood flooring and stuff in it, so that was taken out. So this would be the addendum to that, and it would also authorize us to pay 35% of this contract, which is $72.40.80 out of inheritance funds for that addendum for that hardwood flooring. So.
So the addendum is a reduction.
Yeah.
It's always nice.
Not too often we get those, but once in a while.
Keep them coming.
There's always some good news. Yeah.
It'll be perceived as a doubling, of course. But.
Yeah.
Any more discussion? Gary?
Would you explain that again, Ron? I think I missed something there. I just want to be clear on it.
There was a proposal that Radigan Schottler has sent out, and the board approved the work that he was going to be doing. This is one of those for $24,586.
Okay.
And so this addendum just corrects that part of the original contract for this amount.
So it's a reduction.
Yeah.
We're approving a reduction.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
That's better than a change order increasing it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove quote for emergency management office for data and phone hookups from Diode Communications in the amount of $5,350 to be paid out of emergency management fund.
When
need
the
a motion.
I would move we approve a quote for the emergency management office for data and phone hookups for diode communication in the amount of $5,850 to be paid out of the emergency management fund.
Second.
Seconded by Anderson. Now, Ron.
That's for the installation of 26 data ports and 28 data phones in that office. Now, you may think that's a lot of phones and a lot of data ports, but you got to remember when there's a countywide emergency, that place is used as the emergency center. So any agency that there will, at that emergency time, will have a hookups for their phones, their computers, et cetera, et cetera. This was a need that was set up and approved by FEMA and, or EMA and also the Emergency Management Office. This work was not originally put in the original contract just because at that time we weren't sure of what type, how much work we was going to be doing down in emergency management, so we wouldn't have to end up changing something when everything was done. So it includes 26 data, 28 phone hookups.
Gary?
I guess I'd ask it. Our emergency management director didn't anticipate this when we started all
this?
Yeah,
he anticipated it, but we weren't sure exactly what
we
numbers
were. We chose to leave
be.
This out.
Because
were we tearing out the north wall? Were we putting in... We did not know where we would be.
We remember
to do this.
Yeah. Remember at one time, Gary, we were thinking about coming in with a port over on the east, this side of, and then coming around and going over to the elevator. That was taken out, and some other things were changed. So we just said, better just wait till we get everything done. And this is a pretty good price. So.
Matt.
This was bid, right?
Yeah, we had three quotes, anywhere from $6,300 to basically $5,300.
This is will this come out of the EOC remodel budget? Is that what that $10,000 is there? Is that where you're?
It'll come out of EOC. Out of their emergency management funds.
There's a line item in there for remodel. I just want to make sure we don't spend it twice. So, okay.
Long check with Mark Mites first.
Yeah, just so I'll tell him that's where it's coming from. He can take that off. Yep.
Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Lisa, is there something I forgot? It's unusual for everyone to stay.
They're all in shock.
Yeah, I'm just floored.
What are you going to do the rest of the day?
I know, we're loving it.
She explained it so good.
She did a very good job. She did a very good job. Approve or disapprove adjustment of payroll?
I move that we approve the adjustment of the payroll.
Moved by Barnard, seconded by Bauman. Discussion.
All right, I'll start. This was a project when we put the budget together, wanting to look at hourly pay and just kind of audit, if you will, payroll. Mm-hmm. And we'd sent a kind of a history lesson here, sent out a letter to all the employees, elected officials, and department heads and said we'd like, before we do the payroll, to have all the hours that are submitted. Well, none of that information came in, and I thought, well, why is everyone being so obstinate? What the heck's going on here? Well, the way we pay now, we approve today payroll for Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So we're paying people and approving payroll before we actually pay some, before the work is actually completed. Well, this has been, I got a history lesson from the auditor that this is not a common payroll practice. And so we uncovered this and said, well, we need to fix this. So the plan here is to use the third pay period in December as our adjustment. They would get two, we would continue to do it the way we're doing it until the third pay period, and that pay period, instead of getting paid for 2 weeks, they'll get paid for 1 week. No one's shorted any money. No one's getting cut. We're just adjusting the payroll cycle. Then the first payroll in January will be for the preceding 2 weeks. So you would work 2 weeks. That following Monday, payroll is completed, turned into the clerk's office. The end of that week, you're getting paid on Friday. Just like everyone else does it, but for whatever reason, we were doing it the other way for years. So we'll fix this.
The history
of
county government.
Yes. So we're going to fix this. It's a common practice. Every other business out there does payroll the way that we're going to be doing it. We pick the end of the year. There's three pay periods. we wanted to make sure and be sensitive to not adjusting the first or the second pay period, because there's several deductions, insurance, and whatever that comes out of those. So that third pay period, I believe, would be paid on the 31st of December. That will be for that week that ends on the 31st, and then we'll kick over to do it the correct way. Again, the auditors recommended we should have been doing this. We're going to correct this. We're going to do this. Moving with the newly elected members, starting with the new year, it just seemed like the time was right to do that. So that's kind of it. We're correcting our payroll practices so that we're paying people for the work that they've done, not the work that they may or may not do. Common practice.
Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Committee reports. Ron?
Okay, building and grounds. Go through a couple things we took care of here. We will be working with the Tom Russell, the communications person that's working with the communications of both video and electronic in the district and county courtrooms, as to maybe some wiring needs that we will have to have in both of those offices for electrical and communication hookups. That will be in case we go to computers or television or whatever the case would be at those different tables that the defense and prosecutors would be involved with. It's a much better time to do that now, and basically it's not going to be all that expensive, as most of the wiring for that will come from the underneath from the assessor's office. Just a matter of drilling a hole and going upstairs, and also from the clerk's office. You need another hole drilled up there, don't you, to go up to the county courtroom. So he'll be working on that and getting back to us shortly on that. The lower level windows, most of you have seen what's been going on there. We did that so we could get a rain, because it had rained for about 6 weeks. And so as soon as that was all dug out, we had a ditch, almost 2 inches of rain that come. And luckily nothing soaked into the assessor's office or anything. So we got by in good shape.
We'll dig another ditch in July.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's the good news, is that basement wall was in better shape than anybody ever thought or dreamt or even hoped that it was. And that now that they've got it all cleaned up and exposed, it's...
So he will be getting the stone for that here in the next week or so. And so they'll be able to get replacements. Got the windows already ordered and everything's coming there, so...
With that all exposed, clear down of the foundation, would it not be smart to put in some plastic drain tile? Is pretty cheap, and at least get that side of it done while it's tore up. Why wouldn't we do that for the cost of the plastic drain tile and some gravel before we backfill? How much more would it be to take care of what could be a future problem now that the ground's all open?
I guess we could bounce this off a whim and...
Oh, I sure think. You've got it all dug out, and you've waterproofed it, I saw this morning. It's tarred. There's no better time to put in a drain tile than right now.
Yeah, that stuff is $25 for 50 foot or something.
It's cheap.
It's ridiculous.
Gravel isn't
cheap,
that expensive,
isn't it?
And it's all exposed now.
Yeah, I think that stuff's pretty cheap.
I don't know why we wouldn't try to figure that out. We wouldn't have to revisit it and tear everything up maybe years from now.
Yeah. Okay, good point. I can get another one. The north window bid package, that will be... at our next December 1st meeting, we'll have the bid opening to order to get that all started. We will not go and do anything from the entrance in any windows that way to the north, to the northeast, because there's some issues there that probably will not be able to get underneath of this bid package, because we're using the $98,000 stimulus money.
We're probably
just going to have enough money to do what we can do on that one anyway. So
we have enough in there to finish the project once it's opened up, Ron.
Well,
so we don't have to stop when we open it up.
Yeah, but we're not sure what we're going to do with this north entrance either.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's just some questions that we're not not sure about that point in time.
It's not on the south side when they do the north side.
Okay. I thought I had something else. Okay, yeah. Other thing I just wanted to comment about was there was a comment in the paper by one of the new elected officials that stated his top priority would be putting the courthouse renovation project to bed. I thought about that comment, and I thought 48 years ago we had a fire in this courthouse. There was work done to it at that time to repair the fire. And basically, you could almost say what's been done since that time was almost like putting the courthouse to bed in 1962. Because of everything that we've had to do and come up with, pretty much involved what needed to be done, and still some things involved. Presently, people are concerned that we've spent more money than what the bond issue was, and that's true. Our bond issue was for $2.9 million, basically. But if people would have attended, took the time to attend some information meetings that we had prior to the bond issue, that we were anticipating at least spending about a little bit over $1 million in the next 3 years as incidental stuff to that bond issue for interior type work, remodeling, things of that nature. These were primarily things that was taken out of the $4.7 million amount that we looked at for the first bond issue. That was reduced back to the $2.9 million. So I'm just bringing this out. I would hope that this courthouse will still remain a somewhat of a priority to finish work in the next few years of what needs to be done to the exterior, basically, the stones, making sure that is being taken care of and whatever. But to put it to bed, I don't think we want to do that, because I don't think we don't want to be accused of saying, hey, we did what we had to do and now we're not going to do anything again. I mean, that's where I'm coming from. I think we as a board looked at things and knew what had to be done and felt it was necessary to be done at the time we were doing it, because if you don't do it then, when you got things tore apart, it's going to cost you a lot more to do it sometime in the future. So that's where I'm coming from on that remark.
Mr. Chairman.
Jerry.
I appreciate your comments, Ron, and as you know, when we got on the board, there was a plan in place that nobody had acted on. And I feel like you and I both pushed that because we were on Building and Grounds. This has been about 4 years ago. And I appreciate it because you've done a lot of hard work on this. I also appreciate the fact that Gary Lytle has a right to say what he wants to. And I don't discount what he says, because the public does feel that way to a degree, not everybody. I'm glad we've done what we've done here. But we also have to think then about those that have served before us that didn't do anything with this building other than minimum maintenance. And there are those in this room that served for many years before. And I would not chastise them any more than I would for Mr. Lytle, who's coming on board, for saying what he feels to. And so I hope you understand where I'm coming from.
Oh, I do. Okay. I just don't want the public to think we're going to just go to stop doing something, you know.
But I guess that's all I have to say.
Ron and Ron, to go off that, I know I've had conversations with the clerk regarding the budget as we move forward. Look at developing building funds. There are other political entities that do that and that have infrastructure. We've done that. We started it this year with the insurance to build up that rainy day fund, if you will, at the end of the year. If you haven't expended, not take all of that because you want to decrease the amount of tax asking, but little savings accounts, if you will, to build that up for a rainy day so we can dip in and do some of those maintenance things. So that's the plan moving forward.
Any other committee reports? Matt?
A couple things here. I have had some contact with Humane Society regarding an interlocal agreement. I know we had voted to not do a disbursement until then, bounced a few emails around to get into a very brief contractual situation. My personal opinion is it makes sense to make that a more of a business deal and less of a charitable donation, outline a few things, have got some feedback, need to meet with them face-to-face. Again, it's just one of those things. It's a good thing to get a contract in place so everyone knows what the expectations are, so need to dust that off a little bit more. Met with the 911 Advisory Council as part of an interlocal agreement that we have with the 911 Communication Center in the city. Very good meeting. Boy, they talk about a lot, and we were out of there in less than an hour. So, but I didn't talk, so that's why.
that helps.
Yeah, that helps. They did have a meeting, they being the Communication Center with all the ambulance squads in Gage County, to discuss a backup plan of when they send a call out, how long they're going to wait before they send for the backup unit. And by convention, they've all decided on 5 minutes. So I think that's appropriate. You give the first shot. If the second call has to go out, it's within 5 minutes. And they, the 911 Communication Center, they administer that. I was there as representative from the county. Still need to work on and clarify roles and expectations of how the emergency management position will work with fire, rescue, sheriff's department, 911 communications, just so that everyone knows. You know, as we talked today and listened to Mark's report, there's a lot of administrative stuff he does, and we want to make sure that we're supportive of that stuff getting done. And as the he gets pulled one way, we have to make sure that we're notifying everyone. And we may know what our expectation is, but when you sit in that room and you start to see all the little feelers that go out there, we just need to make sure we keep everyone up to speed. So there'll be more of those conversations. That was that.
Matt?
That's all I'd say about that.
Okay. Gary?
On the emergency management, when we met last week, it was brought to our attention, and talking with other officials from Beatrice, the idea that anybody was going to ever be left and not picked up by an ambulance provider of some kind, that kind of got out there during some of this ambulance talk, that I think me and Matt have discovered that probably never happened. I know for sure that Beatrice will never leave anybody without somebody showing up in some way or form. So that was kind of out there, and I think we got that clarified just with some little investigative work that me and Matt did. I think that's clarified that nobody, City of Beatrice is never going to leave anybody lay in if that's in danger or in need of assistance. So
yeah, they run a top-notch communication center there. They've got all their I's dotted and T's crossed.
Yep.
They do a wonderful job.
While we're on the ambulance topic, I just would like to report that some of the hearsay that Dr. Rice had reported over the Diller rescue unit arguing with Beatrice or whoever it was who was going to carry the patient on, remember, and then that got reported in the paper. Getting it from sources both high level in Odell and Diller that conversation never happened, and Dr. Rice reported it third party from hearsay from a person who seemingly dreamt that up, and the communities of Odell and Diller are both having quite a little bit of heartburn about it, and they're wondering why, if we chastise everybody else, why we don't chastise Dr. Rice from time to time. So just reporting what I'm hearing directly from many sources.
Any other committee reports? Ron?
Yeah, I forgot to bring up that Sunday the lighting thing goes on at 7 o'clock. Between 5 and 7, I guess, are having some information. Judge Tim and myself and Dave Jones and whoever wants to help will be conducting some tours of the courthouse.
What time, Ron?
Between 5 and 7.
I may try to make it.
Okay.
That's Sunday?
Sunday. So people can go through the courthouse to see where their bond money has been spent, where their inheritance money has been spent. They won't be able to see the roof because it'll be dark until the lights go on. But
not going to let anyone walk on it either.
Yeah, absolutely not. But that'll be done so we can show them basically. And we want to specifically show them a lot of the stuff that's going on in district courtrooms. In the county courtrooms, that's going to be involved with that. So we would hope the public would take the time to do a little short tour of the building and see what's being done or has been done. By the way, we're 99.85% completed with Cheever's. So.
Looks like the driver's license room is way from done. That must be the 3%. Or...
Yeah, that's probably that. Yeah.
How much holdback we got on them?
None, really. We're about done with them.
We've paid pretty well, paid them all the money.
I think we got about $5,000 left to pay Cheever's, I think, something like that.
Mr. Chair. I ran this through building grounds on Monday. They didn't see any problem, and it's not on the agenda, but would maybe ask consensus of the board. The Gage County Heritage Preservation Inc. group, which is basically Lorene Redesil, and from five to maybe at most 20 people would attend. As I mentioned before, they would like to meet at the courthouse. They picked the date of Tuesday evening, December 7th. And I've already talked to Dave Jones about it. If that date is okay with him, we would like to use this room right here to have a short meeting, and then Dave would show the preservation group around the courthouse. I think that group is preparing some kind of an award for the county for its efforts in preserving the courthouse. So if by consensus that'd be okay, I'll confirm with Dave Jones and go on with that. No problems with that.
At 7 o'clock?
It'd be at 7, Tuesday the 7th. That'd be the evening before the NACO meeting in Lincoln. And I'm assuming maybe we want to change our board meeting again. Have you guys thought about changing that board meeting date? Because normally it'd be on Wednesday the 8th. When...
No, it's on the 1st
no,
and
it's
the
15th. On the first.
First
it's
the first
what's on the 15th?
Yeah.
First and the 15th.
Ah, okay.
NACO changed it. Because
so it
us.
Didn't conflict. Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't think of that till last night when that meeting was, and I got looking at the calendar and said, well, that's a Wednesday. So don't need to wave that flag. But, well, I'll check with Dave Jones, and then you'll certainly all get an invite to attend. It'd be just a short 30-minute or something business meeting, and then they'll get shown around the courthouse. Thank you.
If there would be more than four of us here, would that be an incidental meeting?
I would think, but who knows?
Depends who's one.
Well, now that we know
the three of you
on.
Stay home. I'll probably be here, so.
Yeah. Anything else for the good of the order?
Almost any meeting I have anymore is incidental.
Don't have to call for a point of privilege?
You're not going to have to today.
Oh, okay. Good enough.
I like this 10:01 stuff. Meeting adjourned.